Thank you, Laura. Please join me in welcoming our speaker tonight, Pat O from Los Angeles, California.
Good evening. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah. Grateful to be sober. Grateful to be here. Thank you, Vaughn, for asking me to participate in my recovery. I appreciate and love you. And it's always an honor and a privilege to be asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous the day you're asked. And then you get to travel and you're like, oh, why did I commit to that? That's a long ways away. And but it is an honor and a privilege to be here. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome our three new friends to Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome you. I'm Tay A. And congratulate the CHIP folks. And on the 23rd of October of 2002, I celebrated 22 years of sobriety. And I think it's I'm still mind blown. You know what I mean? Like, you're still here, you know? And I have a love affair with Alcoholics Anonymous that grows and grows each and every day. I mean, I woke up this morning and I was like, really? Like, it's gonna get, I mean, how can it get any much better than it was yesterday, you know? And I put my hand out to somebody, I put a smile, you know, smile to somebody, you know, I try to be of service, I pray to a God that I question, are you really there, you know? And I take the actions and I meditate and I do those things, and my little heart is full, you know. And when I got here on the 23rd of October of 2002, I remember when I was brand new at my home group, which is a South Coast speakers meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on a Wednesday night at 7:30 in Laguna Beach. Our meeting started in February 1946. There's a lot of structure there, there's a lot of history there, like you know, but I remember this guy, every year he would take a cake in and he'd go, oh, my name's Grateful Bud. And I thought, man, what a loser. Grateful Bud, you know. And every year he'd go, oh, and this is my wife. Stand up, Shelly. And he'd make his wife stand up and he'd be like, this is her one meeting a year, you know. And I'm thinking, who cares, Bud? You know what I mean? And now here I am, like, I have a love affair with AA. you know, it's kind of kooky, but welcome if you're new. you too might fall in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got here, I didn't have alcoholism, that's for sure. You know, I was making all the groups in my area annoyed, you know. Any newcomers? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, my name is Pat, and I'm an addict. no addicts, you know what I mean? I'm like, fuck yeah, yeah. And I slammed the door and I tried to piss the old guy off. And none of them ever followed me out and said, hey, kid, here's a big book. Take this home or to your bush or wherever you're living, you know. Maybe you might have alcoholism, you know. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I mean, how was I supposed to know what alcoholism was when I was brand new, you know? And then I would come back and I would sit in the meeting and I wouldn't identify because I didn't want the judgment in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd go out there and I'd die. And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, sitting in AA, listening to your stories. And thank God you would tell your story, because I would hear a little bit of your story and I'd go, uh-huh. And I'd hear a little bit of your story and I'd say, uh-huh. And I'd listen to your, uh-huh. And I start having these aha moments, you know, and then I'm like, are there any newcomers? I'm like, yeah, finally, I can relate, you know. And I'm like, my name is Pat, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Ah, put $2 in the basket, you know. Some are sicker than others, you know. I'm like, fuck you, old man, you know. And I leave AA, you know, and the laughing stock is the newcomer on the way out the door, you know. And I go out there and I die. And no one ever followed me out and said, hey, you want to go to Polly's Pies or wherever the diner is here and let me tell you my story, you know. And I'm grateful that on the 23rd of October, when I reached out for help, I met a man, my mom introduced me to a man, whatever, I'll tell you my story, but he came and picked me up, and he sat me down, and he read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he told his story as it related to the big book, you know, and when he told his story, he turned statements into questions. And there's a part of the big book that talks about the effect produced by alcohol. And then he was like, well, what's the effect produced for you? And I was like, I'm not alcoholic, you know? And he's like, whoa, champ. He's like, I didn't say you were an alcoholic. You know, he said, what's the effect produced by alcohol? And I had to look at my story. And I have the spiritual malady that big book talks about, you know. I have this nervous disposition the big book talks about. I'm nervous Nelly, you know what I mean? I've like bitten off all my fingernails. Tonight I got like one left over here. I'm, you know, this one over here hurts, you know what I mean? A little blood on this one. I'm still nervous guy, you know what I mean? And I have that angst, you know. I'm a right fielder on the baseball team. You know the right fielders here? One person. Thank you. You know what I mean? Appreciate you. You know, but that's like not something you're bragging about. You're not like, yeah, right fielder, you know. It was like the loser position, you know. I hated neighborhood sports. It was usually the two most popular kids in the neighborhood, you know, and there's like two of us left, and the guy goes, I guess I'll take Pat. Okay, you know. You know, like I'm like the little kid in elementary school that smells like poopy pants and syrup. You know what I mean? I'm like awkward, my hair's like ant, you know, and I'm in right field, you know, just like counting flies, you know. Balls never hit out there. You know, when I got here, like I learned, right? Like I learned that I was self-centered was the root of my problem, you know? But I'm like wondering, like, what's going on, you know? Like I probably would have been diagnosed with ADD. I don't know. They didn't dish out the pellets, you know, like they do now. But like I wander off to left field. And the coach is yelling at me. He's like, the other side of the field, kid. I'm like, oh, what? I don't even know what's going on. I'm looking for the dandelion. Somebody told me if I blow off all those things, I can have a wish. You know what I mean? I'm like wishing for a different life out in left field. And so self-consumed with me. Like I was on second base. I don't even know how I got there. I was terrified. You know what I mean? I didn't know if I had the right belt, the shoes. Did I wear the jersey? Like I'm like, you know, where the heck am I? And the kid cracked a line drive and I ran back to first base. You know what I mean? It was like a triple play in the wrong direction. And little poopy pants back to the dugout, you know. And my friends are running out. And what I heard my friends say that day is, you're a failure, you're a loser, and you're no good. Right now, none of them said that, right? But that was the voice in my head long before I ever took my first drink. You're a loser, you're a failure, you're no good. I'm also a bedwetter. Any other bedwetters here? The right fielder, yes, you know what I mean? And pre-alcohol bedwetter, you know what I mean? Like my mom was like, oh my God, she'd be so excited. I had an invite for a sleepover. She's like, you finally have friends, you know? And I'm like, oh God, I don't want to go, you know? And I would go and all my friends would fall asleep and I'd just be like laying there terrified, you know what I mean? Terrified. And then I'd fall asleep and I'd wake up in the morning and I'd pee my friend's cushion and I'm like flipping it over, you know, hoping no one knows with that like shame on the inside. You know what I mean? That shame and that loneliness on the inside, deep amounts of shame. And I never got invited back to the sleepover. I guess they found out, you know. But when my sponsor asked me, he's like, what is the effect produced by alcohol? Like, I had to look at my first drink when I drank alcohol. And, you know, I grew up in AA. You know, I wasn't supposed to be an alcoholic. I was at every AA meeting. You know, my mom broke the rules. No kids, I was there, you know what I mean? And I was rip-roaring around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd steal the sugar and suck on, like, 20 packs of sugar and eat all the donuts and wired out and spin around AA. But I could recite Chapter 5, and I could recite the 12 Traditions. The end of the meeting, I held hands. I was like, keep coming back, you know? They're like, old-timers are like, oh, we're saving this seat right here for you, you know? And like Lynn Wilder was my basketball coach, you know. My mom was like, here's Uncle Todd, you know, the weirdo from AA's taking me fishing, you know. And dude, it was, I mean, look at the guy next to you, you know what I mean? But every night I fell asleep at Denny's. Right? There weren't like detoxes and sober livings back then. You know, they would take the newcomer woman and they'd take her to Denny's and all the ladies would smoke cigarettes and drink coffee. Right? And then I would go to sleep in the Denny's booth and I'd wake up at 2:15 and I guess that was when the bar closed and they'd send the newcomer off. And I watched a woman die of this disease in my mom's apartment, alcohol withdrawal. You know, like I knew what alcohol did, you know. I knew what recovery was about. I remember this one lady, she was like, my name's Shelly, I got a year sober and I got a full mouth of teeth, you know. And I was like, go Shelly, you know, and AA works. But like I wasn't supposed to drink or do anything, you know what I mean? Like I was like, you know, like knowledge has nothing to do with alcoholism. You know, love has nothing to do with alcoholism either. I mean, the love that I met, my friends at dinner, you know what I mean? Sitting down at dinner, connecting, laughing, talking about things, our interests, seeing my old friend, right? Like, right? Like the love, I feel it. I could feel it in this moment. I could see that head bobbing, right? I could see that smile, that identification, that connection that we share. I could feel God in the moment. You know, but my mom was a blackout drinker. I mean, which means I'll never know who my dad is, you know. That's funny, you know what I'm saying? Everyone's like, ugh, you know. You know, she's a blackout drinker, you know. She didn't even know she was pregnant till she was in labor, which is cool to tell an AA, you know, but like, she thought she was constipated, so she called 911. I guess that's what you do in your concept. You call 911, and she gave birth in her apartment. And the paramedic was holding me, and the paramedic's like, you need to name him. And my mom's like, name what? Her name is Patty, so she named me Patrick, so she wouldn't forget my name, you know what I mean? And my mom used to always send me a text that said, make sure you tell him the truth before every talk. And I sat at the hotel, and I waited for that text, you know? And I guess the truth is I'm supposed to be a turd, you know? But I remember looking outside my mom's apartment window, wonder if my dad was ever coming home. And I would watch cars come down the street and a car would make a left-hand turn. It wouldn't turn into my mom's apartment. And I would fall asleep every night waiting for my dad to come home. And I remember being a little kid saying, if I don't have a dad, then there is no God. You know, my grandma took me to church. She was a church-loving lady. She loved Jesus. She did the things, you know. She would dance around. And I was, like, so consumed with me, like, I was embarrassed to be with my grandma. I'm like, grandma, like, people are looking at us, you know. And so when my sponsor asked me, like, what's the effect produced by alcohol, I was at an AA meeting, of all places, when I took my first drink of alcohol. It was a Saturday night, 8 o'clock, at the South Coast Hospital in Laguna Beach. It was a speaker discussion meeting. It was like the big meeting, and there was this guy, his name was Rick, and he had a trench coat on, he had an eye patch on, he smoked cigarettes, and he was pissed, you know what I mean? He was a chronic relapser. He was angry, new guy, you know? And so me and my little friends from AA would throw pebbles at him, and he would chase after us, and I threw a pebble at him. And one time he got this board and he got these nails and he nailed it in this board. He goes, come with me, kids. And me and little kids from AA wandered off. He put it behind the old timer's car and underneath the tire, and sat back and he goes, I want to see how much serenity they have now, you know. Dude, he was a character, you know. I love that guy, you know. And so I threw a pebble at him and he grabbed me and I kicked him in the shin like I always did. And me and my friends from AA ran out the front of the hospital, out the front door. There's a parking structure across the street, across the little thing. We went up the third and the fourth story of that parking structure, and those kids pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And like, I didn't know what alcohol was gonna do to me or for me, but I knew if I didn't drink it, those kids weren't gonna like me that day. The bottle got to me and I took a pull off that bottle and I hated the taste of that alcohol. It was disgusting, it burned, and I spit it out. And when I spit it out, I was overcome with fear. And what that fear told me was that I wasn't gonna be like the rest of my life. And the bottle went around the second time, and that second time I got that bottle, I was excited about having it. And the excitement for me wasn't that I was gonna get drunk. The excitement for me was that Poopy Pants was gonna have some friends. And I talked myself into holding that tequila down. I took a pull off that bottle, and I talked myself into holding that alcohol down. And I can tell you the exact effect alcohol has on this alcoholic body. In that moment, all that fear went away. Like, in that moment, I felt like I connected to those kids. I didn't know that at 9 years old. I wasn't like, oh my God, the solution to my problems. Like, I had to examine my life when I sat down with that guy with that big book, and he asked me the question, what is the effect produced by alcohol? I had to see the power of alcohol in my life. And I know by going through that big book and with that guy, looking, that something at 9 years old shifted inside of me. And something inside of me shifted was that I knew I was gonna do this again. And by the time I was 11, I was smoking weed. By the time I was in high school, and I grew up in like Mission Viejo, California. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Mission Viejo. It's like the suburbs, right? There's no gang members there. Well, until I got there, you know? Poopy Pants was listening to Eazy-E and Ice Cube, you know, and I had size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up, and a 5XL sweatshirt. I even drank St. Ives of a brown paper bag, you know what I mean? I was pouring beer in the curb for the dead homies, and I didn't have any dead homies, but I was getting ready for some, you know what I mean? And I was like the director of the show. Any other directors here? You know, I come up with a plan really quick, and my friends were hungry, and I was like, I got the perfect plan. They're like, what should we do? I'm like, all right, we're going to call I'll call Domino's. You're going to grab the pizza. You're going to hand them leaves for the money, and then you guys take off. Sound like a good idea? You guys are like, yeah. Everyone else is like, yeah, great idea, Pat. So these two guys went, and a third guy went with them. And the third guy had my stun gun, which wasn't part of the plan, but we were like, okay, whatever. And you grab the pizza, you hand him the leaves, and the third guy stunned the pizza man with my stun gun. You know, and the pizza man's down to the ground, and we didn't even get the money. You know what I mean? We just got the pizza, we ate the pizza, we drank our St. Ides, we did our deal, and I showed up to school the next day, and I get a call slip, right, to go see the principal. Nothing new, I always get a call slip. What does the call slip and the principal say? It always says, you have such potential. Like, if you would just apply yourself, man, you'd be something in life, you know? And so I go get the potential talk, and there's two sheriffs and a detective, and they want to know about this strong-arm robbery case. Now, I'm terrified of what you think of me. Like, I'm willing to do whatever it is I think you want me to do, right? And so I take the fall on a crime I didn't even commit, because I want my friends to like me. And I go to juvenile hall, I'm 16 years old. I go to juvenile hall for 6 months. I'm on house arrest for 6 months. Doesn't make me an alcoholic, it's just the consequences of my disease at 16, though I don't know it, right? Because I'm already pointing it out that I didn't even do it. They did it, right? My fingers were already coming out. And so my little gang came to see me, and they brought me a 40 and a joint and some Indian ink. Remember Indian ink with a needle and thread? And they're like, you need to give yourself a tattoo for your crazy life, you know? I was like, all right, what do I? And so I had to give myself three dots on my ankle for mi vida loca, which means my crazy life in Spanish, I guess. And I don't know what happened, but I just started saying, orale, Holmes, you know? And I was like a gang member now, never even been in a fight, poopy pants, terrified of the world. This is what if you're new, this is delusional. My mind's already completely delusional at 16 years old. Right? Like, alcohol gives me power. Alcohol turns poopy pants into a gang member. And I have a big mouth. I'm like the kid in the crew that has the biggest mouth, and I have the biggest friends. You know what I mean? You want to fight? And I'm like, yeah, get him. And then my friends beat you up. I even get a kick in there. I'm like, yeah, sucker. You know? And I'm like a chihuahua with a big mouth. I'm a coward. I'm terrified. St. Ides, gang member. 17 years old, my mom finds a bottle of tequila and some weed in her house, and she's like, you can't smoke weed and drink alcohol in my house? Like, what? My mom's like an active member of AA, like not just like a, you know, like a sit in the back kind of lady. Like, she's speaking at conventions all over the country, sponsoring thousands of women, going to meetings every night, like, and I'm a full-blown alcoholic in her house at 17 years old, though I don't know it. And so my mom finds this alcohol, and she's like, you can't drink in my house. And I don't know how you hear that, but I hear hide it better, you know? You know what I mean? I have a hearing problem. I don't know that I have a hearing problem. I hear hide it better. So I do. I hide it better for a month or whatever it is. I come out of a blackout. My pants are at my ankles, and I'm peeing all over a fish tank, you know? I'm just a total wreck. No consideration of my mom's recovery, no consideration of this house that I'm living in, no consideration of a high school education. I dropped out at ninth grade, like just complete wreck. And so I come home one night and I ring the doorbell because the top doorbell, the lock is locked, like the deadbolt's locked. And I'm like, dude, I'm in trouble, you know what I mean? And my mom comes to the door and she looks at me and she's like, you're kicked out. And I walked in my bedroom at 17 and I packed my backpack and I walked by my mom and I looked at her right in the eyes and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. And I watched my mom's heart break right in that moment. And like, I don't know how you deal with shame and guilt, man, but this alcoholic arrogance, I puffed my chest, I grabbed my mom by the collar and I slammed her up to the wall. F you, I hate you, you're never going to see me again. And I left that night, I went to an abandoned house where I was getting loaded at, and I took my first hit of crack cocaine at 17 years old. That's the progression of my disease. Full-blown alcoholic. Alcohol is already making decisions for me at that time. What my mom said to me that night, she said, you can stay here and be sober or go out on the streets and get loaded, but you need to make a choice. Alcohol told me that I was kicked out of the house. My mom was my hero and my mom was my best friend, and alcohol told me to put my hands on my mom. And I didn't call my mom for a year because I was going to make her pay for that decision. And the first call that my mom got was that I was in San Francisco and I got hit by a truck and I needed to go to the hospital. And I didn't know how I was going to take care of myself. And my mom was so terrified. And she said, well, I don't know how I'm going to help you. I'm in Orange County and you're in San Francisco. I was like, well, I don't know how I'm going to pay for the hospital. And she's like, well, that's easy. Just give me an address and I'll send them a check. And I'm like, oh, no, no, mom, they need cash. She was like, well, how am I going to give you cash? I said, there's a thing called Western Union. And my mom ran down to that liquor store and wired me $150 just like that. And a week later, guess what happened? Clumsy got in another accident. She wired me $150. And for the next 8 years, my mom would wire me $150 at least once a week. And I'm 25 years old. I'm panhandling. I don't know if there's any other panhandlers here, but panhandling got to the point where you walked by and looked right through me. Like I didn't even exist. And I met this, I was at the cable car on Powell and Market. I started talking to this girl that was there, and I don't know what happened, but pretty soon, like it was like a little hour later, 10 minutes later, she moved me in her house. I'm a tenderloin kind of alcoholic, you know what I mean? Like Eddie and Jones, if you're familiar with San Francisco. Like I'm not a vision for you. I don't know what she saw in me, you know? But she took care of me. She detoxed me. She started feeding me. She got me clean clothes. You know what I mean? And I fell in love. This is my girlfriend now. And 45 days in, 45 days sober, no steps, no sponsor, no God. She's like, you need to get a job, you know? And I was like, I thought this was for fun and for free. Like, what do you mean? You know? And so I did. I got a job. I went. I'm a good getter. I can get it. I can get a good job, you know? Not a good keeper, but... And I got a job at the YMCA in the Presidio of San Francisco. Anyone familiar? At an after-school elementary program as the assistant director. That's what I'm saying. Really? And I got this job. I thanked my girlfriend for my job. I'm like, this is amazing. You know what I mean? And I showed up to work that day, and there was 200 kids, and they loved Pat O, and I'm rip-roaring around with them. I could balance that chair on my chin. I could balance a ladder on my chin. Balance this, Pat, do the, you know. I'm playing hide-and-go-seek. I'm having the time of my life, you know what I mean? I was like, I should have got sober a long time ago. And I went home, and I kissed my girlfriend. I thanked her for my life, and she gave me a little lunch in the morning. Off to work I go, and I show up day two, and there's 200 kids, and they love Pat O, and they want me to play all the games with them. I'm like the most popular counselor there, and go home, thank my girlfriend, and thank you, like good life, you know, thanks. I should wake up in the morning, get my little brown bag, I'm off to work, you know, and not even a cloud on the horizon. There's not even a San Francisco wind that day. And I'm pushing this kid on the swing, and the thought crosses my mind that heroin would be a good idea. So I called my friend. He brought me a pint of tequila and what I needed, and I went into that elementary school bathroom where those kids were running in and out of. And I did what I had to do, and a second grade boy found me on that toilet. And I got pulled off by the director, and she said, you have 10 minutes to get out of here. Come calling the police. And the last thing I want to do is to put your kids in harm's way. And I thought this was about consequences. I always came to AA and listening to the consequences. I thought it was about consequences. You go, your name is John, you're an alcoholic, and you lost your wife. And I'd be like, I don't want a wife. I'm not alcoholic. Now listen to you. Oh, Fred, he lost his kids. I'm like, I don't want kids. I guess I'm not alcoholic. You went to prison. I didn't go to prison. And so here I got this consequence as a direct result of my drug addiction. And I call my mom, like, I need to go to treatment. And so she sent me to treatment, and off to Betty Ford Treatment Center I go. And now I don't have a problem with treatment. I wasn't allowed to fraternize, which I thought was a little extreme, you know. But I'm a rule follower for like 3 days, and I'm 3 days in. This is called people pleasing, not rule following, by the way. And I'm in the infirmary, and I turned around, and there was the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. You know, and we caught eyes, and we fell in love, and we were married, and we had a little yellow house, all in about 3.5 seconds. And I knew she loved me as much as I loved her, so I wrote her a note. And I gave her a note, and she gave me a note, and I got a note. Next day, we were in love, you know what I mean? Total love, rehab love. And I was like super excited about recovery. I'm doing book studies. I'm like junior counselor. I got pom-poms out, rah, rah, rah. I go to Mark. I go, Mark, I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol, sir. My life is unmanageable. He's like, you're getting it quick. Because I could recite the steps when I was a kid. And I'm getting the notes, and one day I go get my note. I was all pumped up, going to get my note, and she didn't give me a note. And I don't know what it's like for you when you're not loved, but I get suicidal. I'm going to kill myself. They're like, what about the book study? I'm like, screw the book study. I'm over it. You know, depressed. 3 days. Woe is me. You know, I was the pom-pom guy. Now I'm depressed. This looks like bipolar. You know what I mean? And one day, my friends in treatment, they're like, you need to go to group. I'm like, screw group. I'm not going to group. You know, effer. I'm not doing it. And they go, just go to group. So I go to group, and she's standing there with this note. You know what I mean? It was like getting hugged by God. All of a sudden, I was like, oh, recovery is the best thing ever. I love this life, you know? And I ran back to my counselor. I was like, Mark, I said, I've come to believe there's a power greater than myself that's going to restore me to sanity. And here's the deal, is I truly thought it was that. I truly thought it was God. I had no idea it was that note. And then he's like, Pat, he's like, you got to do a 9-month program after this. So I wrote my girlfriend a note, you know. And I was like, I have to do a 9-month program. It was like a novel, woe is me. And she wrote me a note back, and on the top of it, it said, I have to do a 9-month program too. And I ran back to Mark, and I was like, holy cow, this is that God's will you've been talking about this whole time, you know. And he's like, where do you want to go to sober living? So I wrote her a note. I was like, where should we go to sober living? She's like, Hawaii. And so we went to Hawaii. Turned my will and life over to her, and she decided Hawaii. And so I got on the plane to go to sober living to be with my sober girlfriend. To be with my sober girlfriend, sober living, thinking that this is about consequences, right? My consequence was a result of my addiction. So when the flight attendant came, she's like, what do you want to drink? Sober says water. Alcoholic says Heineken. She brought me a Heineken. I didn't know that it was the first drink that got you drunk. If you're new, the old guys used to always tell me, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. And I would think, you need to drink through that, old man. You need AA if you're for one beer, you know? But when I drank that first one, that first one drank another one. And pretty soon, 12 or 13 Heinekens later, I land in Hawaii. And I get off the plane, man, and I know that I'm in trouble. And the greatest thing that happened for me in treatment was they told my mom she needed to go to Al-Anon. I hated Al-Anon then, I'll tell you. I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, I need money. She's like, no. I'm like, what do you mean no? She's like, no's a full sentence. I'm like, oh. And I'm like, well, Mom, if you wouldn't have kicked me out of the house, I wouldn't be in this situation. It's all your fault, man. And I hit that guilt button, and my mom would go wire me that money. And I would call my mom, and I'd tell her how much I loved her, and she'd wire me the money. And she'd set a boundary, and I'm just a bulldozer, man. And 6 months in, my mom says, I'm not giving you any money. I'll get you a plane ticket back to Los Angeles. That's all I'm doing for you. And she bought me a plane ticket, and I landed in LAX, and I went straight down town LA to Skid Row, and I used to say I lived on Skid Row for a year and a half, but I survived Skid Row for a year and a half. And three days before I got sober on the 20th of October of 2002, I crawled out of a motel sexually assaulted for the 12th time. And 5:30 in the morning, and I'm walking down Santa Monica Boulevard, and I'm going to kill myself. The only option I have is to kill myself, and I can't imagine my life anymore the way I'm living. And there's a U-Haul truck coming down the street, and I'm timing it just about perfect. It's going fast enough for me to jump in front of this U-Haul truck when the thought crosses my mind that a pint of tequila would be a better idea. And my whole body shifts from this direction, and it shifted to this direction. I started walking down Santa Monica Boulevard to the liquor store. And I got to the liquor store, and it's 5:30 in the morning, man. I'll never forget that 30 minutes of madness and terror. I'll never forget the anxiety on the inside. I'm about to snap out of my skin. That voice is screaming at me how much of a piece of I am, and a loser I am, and just a garbage that I am. The lady opens the liquor store door, and I immediately get that sense of ease and comfort as I'm walking in that liquor store. And I get that pint of tequila, and I go out on that wall, and I put half that bottle back. And I put half that bottle of tequila back, and all that anxiety went away, and the madness settled down, and the voice starts changing. And I start to have that determination to go, I can do this thing one more time. And I put that bottle back, and I start having that conversation with myself. And I don't know what the conversation is for you, but I know the conversation for me. And the conversation for me says, Pat, this time is going to be different. This time you're going to make it right with your mom, and you're going to get that job back, and you're going to go back to school, and you're going to do this thing called life. And in the middle of that conversation, the second voice says, drink that second half of that bottle. And I put that second half of that bottle back, and I blacked out for 3 days. And I came to 3 days later. That was in Hollywood. I came to 3 days later in Anaheim in a motel doing the exact same thing I did day in and day out for one more. It's not lower of a bottom. It's not anything different. But that morning, I know I had a spiritual defense that stepped right in between me and that first thought of that first drink. Because I came to and I heard an intuitive thought that said, call your mom and ask for help. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. And my mom on the other end of the line said, Patrick, I can't help you anymore. She said, just stay right where you are and someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. She said, if I come and get you, I'm going to end up killing you. And she hung up on me. And I'm so grateful that my mom didn't come one more time. Because if my mom would have came one more time, I would have manipulated her for $20 more, and I can guarantee you I wouldn't be standing here tonight. And my mom tried to call every high-profile old-timer in her area to help her kid, and none of them answered. But the guy that answered the phone had a year of sobriety, and he had just gotten off the phone with his doctor that told him he had stage 4 cancer and he had 6 months to live. And he knew that if he didn't treat his alcoholism, he wasn't going to make it 6 months. And he didn't say, have the kid call me. He said, where's he at? And my mom gave him the address, man, and he went and grabbed a new guy because we don't do 12-step calls alone. He grabbed a new guy, and they came down to that motel, and this guy had crazy hair. He was loud. He was obnoxious. He got on my nerves, but he barged in the front door. He was like, my name's Jack, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, I was like vibrating. I was like 98 pounds, man. I was just like, you know, I'm just like, whoa. You know, I was like a noodling around, you know. And the other guy was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I got 90 days sober, you know. And I'm like, losers. You know what I mean? Like, these idiots. I'm thinking that. I didn't say it. I'm like, these guys, man, I'm not. Oh, yeah, I relate to these bozos. You know, this guy's older than Jesus. What do you mean? Like, walker, you know? Like, but I know tonight that when I called and asked for help, God heard that prayer. I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years sober. And I can tell you tonight, God heard that prayer. And I know tonight that when I called and asked for help, I walked into God's grace. Though I'm judging, that guy says, come with me, kid. And I got off the bed and I followed that guy to that motel. And I got downstairs, there was a van. He goes, just get in the van, kid. And I got in the van. And if you're new, just get in the car. Just get in the car. I didn't ask where we were going, I just got in the car. And that guy, Jack, started telling me a story. And he was like, yeah, every time I drink, I go to the hospital. And the old guy in the walker was like, I go to the hospital too. And Jack started laughing. Ah, ha, 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 ha. Oh, I drink and I go to the hospital. And John, the old guy in the walker, is like, ha, 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 me too. And they're just like, me too, ha, 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 me too, ha, 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 hospital drink. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I don't go to the hospital. I'm not like these guys. Here I am separating myself from the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind. My whole life I've been separating myself from you. When I was that little boy in the playground, when I got that triple play in the wrong direction, I remember looking at my mom and she was standing in the stands clapping. And I remember looking at my mom that day saying, if I only had a dad, that had never happened. I had been building a belief system that was going to separate me from you long before I took that drink. And I'm sitting in there and I'm separating myself from those guys that day. And before he knew it, I ended up at Charlie Street in Costa Mesa, California. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Charlie Street, but thank God for the men of Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy didn't try to talk me into his alcoholism. He goes, hey, Pete, come on over here. And this guy, Pete, came waddling on over. And Pete was like tattooed from head to toe. And Jack goes, hey, Pete, when you drink, what happens to you? He goes, I go to prison. I was like, well, I go to jail. And Pete goes, hey, John, come over here. And John came waddling on over. John was a tattooed guy like on his neck, you know. And Pete goes, John, what happens to you when you drink? He goes, I go to jail. I was like, hey, I go to jail too. And then John goes, hey, Fred, come on over. Fred, guess where Fred went? Fred went to jail too. And then all of a sudden, there was like five or six of us. Oh, yeah, we drink, we go to jail. Orale, we drink, we go to jail. Hey, yeah, right on, you know. And we're telling all the war stories. You know, I remember that one time, hey, you know, whiskey, for, you know, and all that, you know. And the little weasel sponsor guy, I didn't even know he's my sponsor. I go, how do you get a sponsor? He goes, I've already been your sponsor. Don't worry about it, you know. And I was like, okay, you know. And he's like, when you're in jail, do you, like, want to go back to jail? I'm like, sometimes it's easier than the streets, you know. He goes, but do you really want to go back to jail? Like, are you trying to go? And I go, no. I mean, I'm not trying to go back to jail. He goes, what happens? I go, well, my mom comes and sees me, my good AA mom, you know. And she's looking at me in the glass. Oh, so much shame, you know. And I look at my mom through this glass and I make that promise. Mom, I promise I'm not going to drink and do drugs anymore. Like, this time's it. And she's like, okay, go to H&I or, you know, that's like where they bring the meetings into the institution, you know. And she goes, just go see them. And so I do. I go to that meeting and I hear you share your story. And I'm like, oh, when I get out, I'm going to go to your meeting. I promise. And I mean it, right? Like, I'm in the game. I even gave my life to Jesus, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, I'm in. He goes, what happened? I go, I don't know. They say, Ochoa, roll it up. I give all the homies my commissary because I'm not going back to jail. This time, I'm serious. And he goes, what happens? I go, well, I'm in the holding tank waiting while they run the warrants, you know, and then they release me and I go to the 7-Eleven. I call for a ride and I get a 12-pack of beer. He goes, you had a 12-pack of beer? I'm like, well, yeah, you know what I mean? So I drink one beer, I drink two beer, I drink three beers. He goes, what happens? I go, I walk down the street, I meet a new friend. He goes, what happened? I said, we became business partners. He said, you became business partners? What happened? I said, I ended up back in jail. He goes, oh, that's great. What happened that time? I go, my mom comes and sees me. I do the H&I, I give my life to Jesus. Ochoa, roll it up. I give all, right? I do the same thing. He goes, what happens? I get out of jail. I call for a ride. I get a 12-pack of beer. One beer, two beer, three beer. That drug's a problem. Alcohol's never the problem. That drug's a problem. Never an alcoholic. I drink alcohol. What happens? I end up back in jail. He goes, oh, that's great, kid. I go, what do you mean that's great? He goes, if you can concede both propositions, physical, that when you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop until you end up in jail. And more importantly, with a sober mind, you have a mind that's driving you back to the thing that's going to kill you. He said, you might be alcoholic. And he just left me in that silence like that. And for the first time in my life, I couldn't lie to myself. And for the first time in my life, I understood what was wrong with me. And I just started to cry. I was like, dude, Jack, I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. And he goes, I got a new guy. You know what I mean? He was so excited, dude. He was like a big book toting guy, big book thumper, they called him. You know what I mean? And he was like, oh, God is the solution. And I'm like, yo, bro, I'm not selling no literature door to door, bro. I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? He had a little bobblehead of Bill Wilson, you know, I'm not, nah, dude, I'm not wearing the bobblehead, bro, you know what I mean? And he didn't try to convince me of his God either. He said, Pat, he goes, the greatest gift Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was when I walked my daughter down the aisle, I had joy for my daughter. Like, what? Like, that was so foreign to me, like, joy for another human being? He goes, yeah, every Saturday I go watch my grandkids play baseball. It's like the greatest day ever in my life. And he goes, I love watching them when they get a hit. It makes me so happy when they throw the ball. It makes me so happy to be there with my family watching my grand. And I'm like, what? And so I came to believe that I too could have happiness and joy for others. That was it. Like, I wasn't like, oh, God's the answer. He was like, well, do you believe in a higher power? I'm like, dude, word games, bro. I know you're trying to trick me into the deal, you know? He's like, well, have you ever gone in the ocean and tried to stop a wave, you know? He's like, that's a power greater than yourself, you know? Bro, no, I'm not doing that. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. But I came to believe in you. Right? I need Alcoholics Anonymous. I need you guys. I need to be in the middle of God's evidence right here. I need to hear the miracles that happen here. If I don't come here, I don't get to see the miracle. I don't get to be witness the miracle of God's work. And so I sat in the meetings and I watched things happen. I saw things change in people's lives. I couldn't see it in mine. But I did a third step with the guy. I got on my knees. It was weird. You know what I mean? God, I offer myself to thee. You know, reading the book, you know. I didn't believe in God, but I did the prayer anyways, you know. And I started writing inventory day one. And he looked at me, he goes, Pat, he's like, man, you need to take a shower. Which I thought was a little rude, you know. I was like, what do you mean? How'd you know? It'd been 8 months, but I said, how'd you know? And I did. I wanted that guy to like me, so I went and took a shower. And I fell down on the ground on that detox floor, and I started to cry. Just surrendered, man, on that floor. Screaming. It's like a scream with no mouth. And that guy came in that shower and that detox bathroom, and he got on the floor, and he held me down there. He just held me in his arms, and he said, kid, it's going to be all right. Kid, it's going to be all right. He's like, kid, it's going to be all right. Kid, it's going to be all right. And his voice got louder than the voice in my head. He said, kid, it's going to be all right. And I turned and I looked at that guy and he looked right into me. And he said, can you stand up, kid? And I stood up and he said, can you take off your shirt? I took off my shirt. He said, take a step in that shower. He took a step in with me. As I took a step, he took another step in with me. And that guy held me underneath the water while I just shook violently and cried. The guy took a washcloth and he took a bar of soap and the man scrubbed my back. And for the first time in my life, I felt love from another human being. Right here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt love for the first time. If you're new, this is about unconditional love here. All he wanted was to get me from that moment he picked me up to the end of that 24 hours. I get one day. He said, kid, there's some clothes in your bedroom and where my detox room was. And he said, I'll see you downstairs. And I put on those clothes and I'll never forget putting on that brand new pair of socks. And he allowed me to have the only bit of pride and dignity that I had left. He didn't try to break me down to build me up. And I went downstairs and I sat down with this guy and he gave me a hug and he said, I love you, kid. And he gave me a pad of paper and he said something to the effect, though the decision was vital, it has little permanent effect unless it once followed by. And I started writing inventory day one. 4 days sober, I was already on my ninth step amends. And he started talking about going to sober living. And I was like, well, I can't go to sober living. He goes, why? I go, I have to go to the Salvation Army. He goes, why? I go, because I have a warrant. He goes, oh, that's great. We're going to turn you in tomorrow, you know. I was like, bro, no, I'm going to prison for 3.5 years. He goes, nope, nope, you have God in your life. I was like, no, remember, I don't believe in God. He goes, you can borrow mine, you know. I'm like, what? I can borrow yours? You know what I mean? I'm going to prison. The judge told me. And he's like, no, you're sober now and you have God in your life. And okay, so he comes and picks me up the next day and he puts me in a suit. And I go show up to the front of the judge and I'm standing there. He goes, Mr. Ochoa. And I stand there. And he goes, you remember the last time you were in my courtroom? I said, yes, sir. He said, you remember what I told you? I said, yes, sir. He goes, okay, then what did I say? I said, if you saw me in the courtroom, you're going to sentence me to 3.5 years in prison. He said, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you remember. And he closed the folder and the guard came and cuffed me up and took me to prison. And I'm going to the holding tank, man. And that voice starts going, man, why'd you trust that man? You never trusted men your whole life. And one more time you put trust in another human being. And one more time another man has failed you. And I got on my knees in that holding cell. And because a guy named John Ackerland told me this prayer. And I got on my knees and I said, God, I don't believe that you exist. But old man John told me to pray. Get me the heck out of here, will you? Amen, you know. And guess what? 4:30 in the afternoon comes and they cuff us up to the guy next to us and we get on the bus and now sponsorship doesn't work. Old timers don't work. God doesn't work, right? Wah, 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 wah. My head's going. I'm looking outside the window. I'm going to prison. And the engine starts and the door closes and I'm going to prison. And the door opened up and the guard goes, Ochoa. Three of us raised our hand, you know. And then she said, Patrick. And the other two dudes were pissed, you know. And I got off the bus and I went up in front of the judge. And the judge goes, I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm going to give you another chance. He said, there's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he pointed to my goofy sponsor over there. He goes, that guy's been fighting for you to get out. He goes, honestly, he's annoyed the heck out of me all day, you know. And so what happened was he called the Salvation Army over and 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 over until someone answered. And it was Tuesday at 4:00 in the afternoon. And my sponsor said, this guy finally answered. He goes, I got a kid named Pat Ochoa who needs a bed. And I went into the Salvation Army, man, up that day. This guy, Tim P., was the one. He had gotten sober, and he had became a counselor, and he wasn't supposed to go in that room, but he had to make copies, and so he snuck in there, and he wasn't supposed to answer the phone. And when my sponsor said, I got this kid, Pat Ochoa, I used to get loaded with Tim and see God's working in my life, though I can't see it. And I went to the Salvation Army, and I don't remember how long I'm talking. And so I went to the Salvation Army, and my sponsor came every Sunday to see me. And 90 days in, I was like, man, I don't know if you've been in the Salvation Army, but they give you $4 a week gratuity. We work for 60 hours, you get $4 a week. I'm like, this doesn't add up, you know. I got ungrateful. I was ungrateful, bud, you know. And I got ungrateful. I was like, man, I'm not going. And so I left the Salvation Army that I completely got released, you know. And I left it 90 days, and I got a job as a manager at a restaurant. I got sober living. I'm doing good. I'm sober, 90 days, making amends. And I go to the judge to tell him what I did with this opportunity. And he said, I'm glad that you're on your ninth step, and I'm glad you're sober all these days. He's like, but I'm gonna give you a probation violation, and he sent me to jail for 100 days. And my sponsor said to me, he said, this is you cleaning up the wreckage of your past. And he said, I want you to look for the gratitude in jail. Not like you're grateful for your family outside. I want you to find the gratitude inside jail. And he said, I want you to be a service. And so I said, okay. And I went into jail, and for the first time in my life, I felt free. And I got in that jail, and I got a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I started studying it like my life depended on it. And I got a little pencil, and I was underlining, and I was reading, and these guys were offering me alcohol, and they were offering me drugs. I'm like, yeah, I'm good, I'm bobbing and weaving. And then the one guy goes, are you a snitch or what? And I sat these seven guys down, and I told them my story. I mean, they had nowhere to go, they were stuck, you know, they had to listen. And I got done, and the guy was like, you're right, we don't want to give you any, you know, And this guy after came up to me, he's like, yo, I'm looking at 10 years in prison, and I can't stay sober, and I don't know what to do. I had about 100 days sober, right? And I shared my experience, my strength, and my hope. And I said, man, I went and told the judge I was alcoholic and addict. I needed a program. Maybe he'll help you. And so he went to court the next day, and he came back, and he gave me a hug in front of six dudes crying in my arms. And he's like, they're going to release me to the Salvation Army. He's like, but I can't stay sober, and you're staying sober. How you doing it? And I sat down with that guy, and I read word for word and line for line out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I talked about when I drink alcohol that I end up in jail. And every time I get out of jail, I think it's this drug and that drug, and alcohol's never a problem, and I drink alcohol and I end up back in jail. And I left him in the pause, and he said, I'm alcoholic, and I lit up like a chandelier. I was like, I got a new guy, you know? And he had a bigger God than me. He was a religious guy. I didn't believe in God. And what happened was we got on our knees in that institution, and we did a third step. And he got released, and I got released, and I went to the Salvation Army on a 2-hour bus ride one way because my sponsor did that for me. And I went to go hear his fifth step, and he had left, and he had gotten loaded. And I called my sponsor, and I was like, I can't believe it. Maybe if I would have went 3 times that week, or if I would have answered the phone, and here I am taking responsibility for his recovery. And my sponsor at the other end of the line said, Pat, he said, who's still sober? And I said, I am. And what I came to learn was that one alcoholic working with another alcoholic allowed me to stay sober one day at a time at an institution. The new guys, the guys that I get as sponsors, saved my behind way more than I'll ever save theirs. And I caught fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got out of that jail, and I made amends to my mom, and I sat down with my mom, and I was like, hey, remember that one time I asked you for the money? I go, that was a lie. She's like, I know. I go, remember that other time I needed the money for the clothes? I go, that was a lie too. She's like, I know. I go, you remember that one time she stopped me? She goes, I know that every time you ask me for money, I know it was a lie. And I was like, then why did you give me the money? I was like baffled, you know what I mean? And she was like, because when you left my house at 17, you broke my heart. And I stayed up every night terrified I was going to get the call that I had to come identify the body because you bled out. And I got really present to how my behavior affected another human being. It wasn't about the lie. It was that I robbed my mom of her security day in and day out for one more drink. And I said, Mom, what can I do to make this right? And she said, I just want you to get in the middle of AA and help as many people as you can. And I was like, this AA thing's amazing. I gave my mom a hug. She told me she loved me. And for the first time in my life, I felt love for my mom. And I ran back to my sponsor. I was like, this AA thing, I love it, man. It's awesome. You know, he's like, yeah, but what about the money? I said, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. She don't want the money, bro. He goes, yeah, but AA wants you to pay it back. You know, I thought, oh, I'm never telling this guy anything ever again. And he goes, you're going to pay her $25 a week. $25 at a time. Oh, my God, this guy. You know. And I had to write my mom a note. Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today. And leave her $25. Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today. Leave her $25. Every week. And then he's like, you're doing a good job. And I'm thinking, I got the attaboy from the sponsor, you know, like that feels good, you know. He's like, yeah, I want you to write the note every day. I thought I was doing good. Why am I being consequenced, you know? And I did. I started writing the note every day and leaving her the money once a week. And all of a sudden, these notes started turning into like love novels. You know, I mean, I remember when I was 10. Some of them even had little teardrops. I would circle the teardrop on there, you know. And I saw you guys were like getting boyfriend and girlfriends. And I was like, what about me, you know? And I'm having a love affair with my mom. This is weird, you know. And I call the sponsor. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. He goes, you don't have to do it anymore if you don't want. He said, but how free do you want to be, kid? Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today, you know. And an AA boy met AA girl on AA campus. And we went to Vegas and she got pregnant. And I don't know how to be a dad. I'm terrified. I don't have a dad. How am I going to do this? And my sponsor told me, yeah, just ask her. And so I did, you know, my mom's in there taking pictures, the day of labor, and I'm just, this is weird. And my son came out, and I looked right into the eyes of God. My message isn't to have babies and find God. That's not the message here. But what happened was it was like a chisel that knocked the ice off of my heart. I was terrified to love and to be loved on the deep level, that the relationship I have with my son, you know. I didn't know that at the time. And I'm thank God for the women in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I would hear you in the meetings, in the discussion meetings, and you would talk about how the father of your child didn't show up for visitation, or the father of your child didn't show up for financial monies for the, and I learned how to be financially responsible and how to show up for my son through your pain. And I would call you and I'm like, he has the hiccups, what do I do? You're like, I don't, what do you do when you have that? I'm like, I wait. They're like, perfect. And you'd hang up on me. And I took care of him for the first year of his life when he was an infant, because I went to school and he cried. So I put him on my head up there. He didn't cry. I was pretty proud. I walked around all the time with my kid on my head. And I was at my house and my sponsee was there. And I stood up and I put my son's head on my head, and I put his head right into a ceiling fan. I was like, whack, whack, whack. And my sponsee grabbed my kid and I went to the back room and I got on my knees. I was like, God, I don't believe that you exist. But old man John told me to pray. What the heck do I do? And I heard a voice that was like, you need to call the doctor, you know. So I fucking profound. I called the doctor. He told me what to do. I grabbed my kid. There was nothing wrong with him except for a little bump on his head. But what happened for me in that moment was that I cared about another human being more than I cared about myself. Selfishness and self-centeredness walked through that door on the 23rd of October of 2002. And I had to make a living amends to my mom every week. I would drive an hour and a half in rush hour traffic to get my kid to drive back rush hour traffic for an hour and a half to sit with my mom for 45 minutes every Monday night to be abused. I mean, my mom, you love my mom, but my mom was, you were like hugging a cactus, you know what I mean? She would bark at me for biting my nails. She's like, stop biting your leg, you know what I mean? I was like, you know, I hated it. And finally, I was like, I'm not doing this anymore. And my friend Michelle L. said, you're going to have to teach your mom how to love you. I'm like, what? She's 40 years sober. You know what I mean? I'm still that 8-year-old boy that wants to be loved by his mom, you know, 40 years old. And so I did. I started grabbing my mom and hugging on her and kissing on her. And she was like, oh, awkward, you know. And we were going to speak in Vancouver, and I had a warrant. I had a felony, so I couldn't. I go, Mom, how am I going to get into Vancouver? She goes, if it's God's will, we'll get in, you know. So I'm pushing her in a wheelchair, and she started flirting with this passport guy. She started telling him how hot he was, and she wanted to know if she would go on a date with her in Canada, and he got, like, beet red. He just stamped the passport, you know. And I go, Mom, was that God's will? She goes, I don't know. We're in, you know. And we went to go speak in Nebraska, and she, like, can't breathe. She has an oxygen tank. I'm like, dude, Mom, just get in the wheelchair. I'm not getting that guy. I said, Mom, just get in the I'm not getting that. We're arguing. She's about to die, you know. Finally, I looked at her and go, Mom, when are you going to let me love you? And my mom sat in the wheelchair. You know what I mean? dude, I was so proud. I was like, yeah, you know, I got my mom, you know, and something shifted in our relationship in that moment. I had no idea what it was. We got to the hotel. I gave my mom a kiss. I said, I'll see you in the morning. And I woke up in the morning and I got in the shower and I turned the water on and all this red dye, like water came. She had snuck a dye tablet, a red dye tablet in the shower head. And I came out and my mom was like, got him, you know. And our relationship shifted to a friend relationship, you know. And my mom was, well, Ralph White told me I had to keep telling this story, though it's painful, you know. After our home group, I called my mom like I always did after the home group, and she complained about the speaker like some of you will do tonight, you know, and I said, Mom, I'll see you in the morning. And I showed up to her house in the morning, and her wife rushed her off to the hospital because she had a tumor that blocked the passageway. And I show up to the hospital, and the women in Alcoholics Anonymous were surrounding my mom. And my mom would say, don't sit here and watch me die. Go out there and live your life. She said, but come back tomorrow, will you, and give me a kiss? And I'd come back the next day, and she'd say, don't sit here and watch me die. Go out there and live your life. Come back tomorrow and give me a kiss. And that old resentment, man, of the women in Alcoholics Anonymous was fierce. Because my whole life, the women in Alcoholics Anonymous took my mom from me. And I was so angry. But I would show up and I'd give my mom a kiss and she'd say, don't sit here and watch me die. Go out there and live your life. And then they put her on hospice and then she's like, I'm only going on hospice to get off hospice. I'm like, gangster mom, you know. And sure enough, dude, she got off that hospice bed and she was back at her Thursday women's meeting and she was back at her legacies and back at the home group and back at Starbucks with the big book. And we're sitting at my home group, and I'll never forget that last time. She'd always sit on the stage at my home group, you know, and she was sitting there, and after the meeting, I called her, and she complained about the speaker, and I said, I'll see you in the morning. And I showed up that next morning, and the tumor had grown back. And they rushed her to the hospital. I know it's the end. And I sat in a lot of my home groups a speaker meeting, and some of the greatest speakers would say the greatest gift Alcoholics Anonymous gave me was I was there when my loved one took their last breath. And I want your experience, man. I don't want my experience, which means I can't be here when my mom takes her last breath because my mom's telling me to go live my life. And I'm going to speak in Idaho at a young people's convention. I don't know if you've ever been to one of them, but they're quite the experience. And I pray and I go, God, I don't want to miss my mom's last breath. I go, I don't know what to do. I'm going to Idaho and I don't know what to do. And I heard in meditation, you need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I don't like that answer. So I pray 2 days in a row. I get the same answer. I pray 3 days in a row. I get the same answer. And I finally call my sponsor, right? Because he's going to tell me, like, you need to be a service to your mom, right? And so I call my sponsor. I go, Sponsor, what do I do? He said, what did God want you to do? I don't like that. And so I went and gave my mom a kiss. And I said, Mom, I'll be back. I didn't tell her where I was going. I just said, I'll be back. And I go to Idaho, and I'm just going to speak Saturday night. There's like, I don't know, 1,000 young people hooting and hollering, screaming, and why pa? And I'm dying on the inside. And I get a call from Michelle. She said, your mom's been unresponsive for 3 days. She hasn't moved, and she hasn't said a word in 3 days. You need to hurry up and get back so you can say goodbye to your mom. She wants to say goodbye before she leaves, before she passes. And I get on my knees in this auditorium and I go, God, I don't know what you want me to do. And I sat and I could hear that intuitive thought said, you need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I gave a talk that night, man. And the next morning I get on the plane and I fly home and I race to my mom's house where she's on hospice. And I went into that room and my mom sat straight up like this. Spirit felt spirit walk in the room that day. I think the greatest promise in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the 10th step where it says, we have entered the world of the spirit. I went into my mom's arms and she held on to me and she said, Pato, I want you to know you did the right thing. And she said, I love you, I love you, I love you. And that was the last words that my mom said. A day or two or whatever it was, my mom died and my heart broke. But what happened for me, and I believe what happened for my mom in that moment, was there was a level of forgiveness that was so profound. All my mom wanted me to do is to get in the middle of you and help as many alcoholics as I could. And I honored my mom's amends to the day that my mom died. I kissed my mom on the forehead and I said, Padu, I want you to know from this day forward, I'll carry on your legacy in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And it's my prayer every night when I get to my hotel, I'll pray that you find somebody in this group that has a working knowledge of that big book. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all. Thanks.